Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the Wisconsin Supreme Court says it will make as few changes as possible when drawing up the state's new legislative maps. We'll find out how justices might approach that task and what it could mean for policy decisions over the next 10 years. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Your financial support is the foundation for all the great discussions you enjoy here every day. Make your tax-deductible year-end gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. With me now, the Larry Mueller. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Rob. I'm really excited to be with you today. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I was on with Kate on the morning show today. Kate was on with you. You're on with me now. The circle of life is complete.
And we've got a little business to attend to, you know. I want to thank everybody who gave last hour. This hour, we have a goal of 10 gifts.
It's the last weekday of this drive, your last chance to give during Central Time, a fine time to give. These hourly goals are a big deal. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong here on the Ideas Network. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio, we're committed to quality around here, and that's why we've been around for so many years, 100 years, more than 100 years. I haven't been here that long.
Me neither.
But quite a while. Maybe between the two of us, we're approaching it. Anyway, listener donations make up the largest piece of funding, of course, for our WPR programs. And that quality is possible because of you. And I want to thank you so much for your contributions.
That's right. Everything we've managed to do here on Wisconsin Public Radio over time has come because of listener support. Your contribution made the Ideas Network possible when it was created, some years back. Central Time, you helped us get that started. When you give, you're part of the quality you hear every day, part of the future of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a difference right now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I like the fact that this drive, we can provide hunger relief in contributors' areas. So you can ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts. There are options available at $10 or $20 a month, and you'll have hunger relief provided in your area.
And Alliant Energy partnering with us. They're matching right now every meal given through the food bank thank you gifts. Could mean an extra 12,500 meals for your community. Increase your impact with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I bet you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio every day, and because you do, you know how important it is to you, and you want it to be here for the next generation.
Your gift right now, it's a building block for a stable future, supporting the quality news, info, music, and entertainment that enriches your life day in and day out.
So I hope you'll invest in quality programs for yourself and for the upcoming generation. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, Larry, people call into your show all the time with complex questions about maybe home maintenance or identifying wildlife or whatever. Here's one thing that's easy, though. You don't need a lot of help to do this. Giving to WPR. It's super easy. We just need your name, your contact info, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
I've done it many a time. It takes just a couple of minutes to make your contribution to WPR. And those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Looking for 10 gifts this hour on this last weekday of this drive. Last chance to give during Central Time. Larry Mueller with me to give you some more encouragement. Maybe start a tradition this year. Make a gift for the programs you've enjoyed in 2021 that you know you're going to rely on in 2022. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll be entered in a great drawing. Five lucky people will win $250 to spend on unique items at Etsy.com. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And sustainers, those of you making those ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
It's a great extra little thank you for making your gift. The important thing is that you appreciate shows like Central Time and the Larry Mueller Show, and you want to help pay for it and keep them strong into the future. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. Now, Republicans currently hold large majorities in the state legislature, 61-38 in the Assembly, 21-12 in the Senate. They also hold 5 of Wisconsin's 8 congressional seats. With new legislative maps, the state Supreme Court is going to be drawing for the next decade. Those majorities may stay pretty constant. Earlier this week, the justices ruled they would take a, quote, least changes approach in a 4-3 vote. That means they'll use the existing maps as their starting point, and they say try to make as few tweaks as possible. Democrats not real happy about that. They insist that Republicans unfairly drew the current maps to their advantage back in 2011 and that the districts need to be more politically neutral. The courts have said even though the boundaries favor Republicans, they're not technically illegal. The maps need to be in place by April 15th of next year so candidates can start passing out nomination papers for fall primaries. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the way the Supreme Court is handling redistricting? Do you feel like you're properly represented in your district? Or do the boundaries not make sense to you? Do you have questions or desires of what you want to see come out of all this? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center. He's faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. Rob, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this new ruling this week from the state Supreme Court saying, yeah, we're going to go with as close as we can to the old maps when we end up with these new maps. What do you think of that decision?
Well, so this is the so-called least change approach. And, frankly, I think that some of the legal arguments that the court made are tough to take seriously. This decision is very different from the approach that was taken by the federal courts when they drew Wisconsin's electoral districts in the 1980s, the 1990s, and the 2000s. And it's quite out of step with the way that a lot of other courts around the country have approached this issue. For the most part, courts have understood their obligation to be neutral arbiters to mean that they should not adopt maps that have a partisan skew. And instead, the court here seems to think that neutrality requires them to blind themselves to the partisan nature of the existing maps.
But as I understand it, Rob, under Wisconsin law, under the Constitution, partisan makeup isn't one of the guiding principles, right, in the drawing of these boundary lines.
So there is no explicit requirement under Wisconsin law that that partisan fairness needs to be taken account of. And so this is instead primarily a question of what the judiciary's role is as a map maker. And the norm in Wisconsin in prior decades was that when courts drew maps, they would reject plans that they thought had an evident partisan bias to them. And so this court is taking the legal notion that legislators are not required to consider partisan fairness and saying that that means that courts as well shouldn't have to. But that's a bit of a different issue. You know, courts as map makers sort of have different institutional responsibilities than lawmakers do.
Now, of course, courts are in this. They're not supposed to be, ideally. The legislature draws the maps. The governor can veto or approve them. The governor vetoed them. This has happened many times in Wisconsin history, of course. As you mentioned, it ends up in the courts. Why don't we have a system where it's supposed to work where it works as it's supposed to be, where lawmakers and maybe the governor negotiate out a map and keep the courts out of it?
You know, that's a great question. And there are some states where there's divided government, where the political branches are able to reach an accommodation. Now, the reality is that when the state Supreme Court telegraphs that it's going to adopt a map that is a least change map, that actually gives the political branches less room to compromise. I mean, there's not much reason for the legislature to negotiate with the governor if the legislature thinks that the court is just going to give it what it wants.
Now, there are, of course, two separate court systems. There's the state's court system, where our state Supreme Court has announced this decision. Maps in the past have been decided in the federal courts. The federal courts seem to be standing on the sidelines so far, Rob, though there are cases in front of them. What's going on there?
So as a legal matter, the U.S. Supreme Court has basically said that state courts have first dibs on this work if they want to do it. And in the previous decades, the Wisconsin Supreme Court basically was happy to stay on the sidelines. They didn't want to get involved in such a politically contentious case. And so that's why in the past, we had federal courts doing the work. But this time, because the state Supreme Court was willing to jump in, the federal court right now is sitting back to see if they indeed are able to adopt maps. If, for whatever reason, the state court isn't able to do it, if they decide at the end of the day that, you know, maybe they should have kept their hands off, then this will end up with the federal court court as a final backstop.
Now, a key part of the majority ruling here from the state Supreme Court was to say the current maps were passed by the legislature, signed off on by the governor, and survived a lot of challenges in the federal court system, made their way to the Supreme Court, bounced back down to a lower court. Ultimately, it all fizzled. So they've stood the test of federal court challenges. So why shouldn't the state Supreme Court go ahead and say, yeah, we'll go with this as a starting point?
Well, you know, an odd feature of the state Supreme Court's analysis is that it's using these decade-old maps as a starting point, but those decade-old maps had a shelf life. They were supposed to last for 10 years. They were adopted in 2011, and now they're done. And so to perpetuate those maps beyond that 10 years actually is not what anyone expected when those maps were adopted. What the law is that every 10 years, lawmakers are supposed to take a fresh look at the maps. And the political branches here didn't do that. And now the Wisconsin Supreme Court is saying it's not going to do that either. And in practice, that really functions as a windfall to the legislature. It extends the shelf life of these maps for another decade.
We're taking a look at what Wisconsin's legislative maps might look like once the state Supreme Court is done with them. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison, faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to this announcement from the state Supreme Court. Possible changes to the maps, the overall process, accusations of gerrymandering, or your questions. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're looking at new legislative maps and how they might play out in the state Supreme Court. In a win for Republicans, justices ruled this week in a 4-3 vote that they'd take a, quote, least changes approach using the current maps with big GOP majorities as a starting point. Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center, faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. And you can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I feel like somebody got to and broke the morality of Justice Hagedorn, who I was impressed with earlier, and I'll admit didn't vote for before, but I was actually going to because of what he managed to stand up for. And now I'm rethinking that. I also think of when you have stories of corrupt politicians basically taking what a lobbyist hands them and putting that sometimes word for word in a bill, and kind of wonder about this court case and the Will organization. I call it the Wisconsin Institute to Outlaw Liberty, which is exactly what they're trying to do right now.
Nate, thanks for the call. Nate, first of all, referring to Justice Brian Hagedorn and his past votes against some of the election challenges in the presidential election. Rob, he was viewed, I think, as a possible swing vote on this, actually signed a separate statement to go along with a majority. What do you see his role as being here?
Well, I think that he is usually considered the swing justice on the court. And I think that there probably were a lot of folks who were hoping that we were going to put these gerrymanders in the rearview mirror that are disappointed that he joined the majority here. He may still play an important role as the court chooses a final map. Perhaps he will be more willing than some of his colleagues to deviate from exactly what the legislature's wish list is. But, you know, that will remain to be seen.
And Nate also referred to, I think it affects concerns about accountability. If, say, lawmakers crib notes from a lobbyist's suggestions and put them right into legislation, is the example Nate gave. I know one of the accusations about gerrymandering is if you've got a safe seat, you can just kind of do stuff and not worry about getting voted out.
You know, absolutely. That's part of the classic critique of gerrymandering. What it does is it reduces electoral competition and thus electoral accountability. And if lawmakers don't think that they're going to be held accountable by the voters, then they don't have to respect the views of those voters.
Thanks for the call, Nate. We'll go to Don in La Crosse now. Hi, Don.
Hi. I'd like to know how many of these judges have been put into power by the Republicans, either dark money or money from Republican sources.
Thanks for the call, Don. And of course, Rob, we have nonpartisan elections in court races here in Wisconsin, but with every Supreme Court election, there's the Republican nonpartisan candidate and the Democratic nonpartisan candidate in effect, right?
It does seem like that is the road that we've gone down. And, you know, I think the funding that those candidates receive would reflect that. And, you know, I think that conventionally we think of our court right now, a 7-member court, and we think of 4 of those justices, although nonpartisan, as being more aligned with the state's Republicans.
Thanks for the call. Dave joins us next now in Toma. Dave, hello.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to see them just freeze the lines where they are, because I've listened to some of your other shows, and everybody says, let's change them so they can be an advantage to this group or that group. And I think if we freeze it for a given extended amount of time, eventually things are going to change, and nobody will be happy, but I think it's the fairest way to go. Just leave it alone and set a time limit where it's got to stay that way for a certain amount of time.
Dave, thanks for the call. Currently, it has to stay that way for 10 years, Rob, but can lines stay fixed over beyond that 10-year span?
So as a matter of federal law, they really can't. And the reason is that the Supreme Court decades ago said that legislative districts have to be equally populated, and populations shift. Every decade, we have a census that tells us the extent of those shifts. And in response, there is an obligation to redraw districts. Now, you could have a system in which you start off with a map that maybe everyone agrees is about as fair as we could do. And then from that point, maybe you do have a situation in which you try to change that map as little as necessary over time. But of course, you know, in Wisconsin, we're not starting from a neutral baseline when you think of the maps that we have on the books right now.
Dave's other point, though, however you draw a map, somebody's going to be unhappy about some aspects of it. How do you get a map that, even if you could make up a whole new system, a map that everybody thinks is, you know, reasonably fair?
Yeah, you know, there is no such thing as a perfect map, and maps inevitably will create some winners and losers, some people who are happy and unhappy. And that actually is a reason why you might want to shuffle the deck every decade, at least if you do it in a relatively nonpartisan way. And so, you know, maybe one decade you have a community that ends up being divided and they're unhappy about that. But the next decade, when you redraw the maps, maybe that's an opportunity to put that community back together.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. And Rob, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Good talking to you.
Rob Yablon is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty affiliate with the Elections Research Center, also the faculty co-director of the State Democracy Research Initiative. We talked to him today about the Wisconsin Supreme Court's approach to drawing new legislative maps for the next decade. You can see more reporting on that at WPR.org and get lots and lots of background from the Mapped Out podcast from WPR News. And I think we've got a new installment of that coming out in not too much longer, with a lot of updates related to what we just talked about. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll learn about the science of flavor with a molecular biologist and get some tasty recipes. Science-based recipes, too. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Larry Mueller joins me. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported. Your gift now ensures the programs you count on have a strong start for 2022. You make WPR programs possible as we head into the new year when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have about 30 minutes or so left in this hour, and we're looking for 6 more people to join in. Thanks if you've already given.
If you haven't, there's not a lot of time left. This is the last weekday of the drive, last chance to give during Central Time. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and then your gift funds the conversations you count on.
You know, I think this last segment on the new Wisconsin legislative maps was great, and I think it's really indicative of the kinds of programming you hear on Central Time every day. I learned a lot, and I also appreciated the great calls that came in from listeners. These are the kinds of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
And WPR is listener-supported. That means we count on you for your donation to keep things going strong at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You could choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
You might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone and maybe for Netflix, and now we are asking you to support WPR like you pay for those other services you rely on.
The difference here is that you get to decide how much to give. Support the programs that are a part of your day, become a WPR sustainer, choose a monthly gift amount that works for you, and then set up ongoing installments at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
there's a lot to celebrate today. You know, 2021 has been a big year, and whether you've turned in, you've tuned in for daily news, inspiring stories, or refreshing music, listeners like you make all the programs you enjoy possible. And as we look to 2022, I hope you'll join in the celebration. Make your gift for the programs you turn to all year long. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. For you, maybe that's a gift of $100 or even $200 a month.
And maybe that's what you pay for cable or your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day, and so I want you to put a value on it, like the other things that are important to you, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Halfway to our goal already, Larry. That's awesome.
Good.
Looking for five more gifts now by the end of the hour. Your gift today ensures a bright future for the programs you count on. You can make that gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And be sure to choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month. Alliant Energy, Rob mentioned earlier, it's partnering with us, and they'll match every meal raised through the food bank thank you gift, up to $5,000 worth of meals. So ask for your food bank gift and get it matched at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We heard from Ann in Eau Claire. Ann says, I've been listening to public radio since college days when I discovered this new fact-filled and interesting radio station while waiting for my dad and flipping through stations 50 years ago. Thanks, Ann says, for being part of my life for such a long time. Great. Thank you so much, Ann. Glad we've been able to be part of your life. Glad you discovered us by chance, it sounds like, 5 decades ago. And thank you so much for giving. How about you? Is Wisconsin Public Radio an important part of your life, of your day? Do you want to keep us going strong for the next person to discover? You can make that happen when you make your gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll talk to a molecular biologist turned food writer about the science of flavor and how we can make our favorite recipes even more flavorless. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller is with me, also from the Ideas Network. You count on WPR for in-depth conversations. It's your support that keeps these conversations going strong. Your gift right now makes a big difference this year and as we head into 2022 at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, we have five more people we need to join in during the next 25 minutes in order to reach our goals. And, these hourly goals, they're set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donation right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
As an Ideas Network listener, I know just the fact that you listen to the Ideas Network means you're somebody who wants to know stuff about what's going on in the news, in the world, and the culture around us. And we're right there with you. We check out all the angles here on Central Time.
And we're grateful for your support. It makes all the stories you hear on the show possible. So please do give now. It makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, we don't expect any one listener or even 100 listeners to carry all the costs of this program. It's a good thing that lots and lots of different people chip in an amount that's comfortable for them. That ends up being the bulk of funding for WPR programs, spread out over thousands of donors like you.
And when we have a wide base of support, it makes for a more stable organization for sure. So join in, become a member. Your gift might be $100, could be $10 a month. You decide the amount and donation method that's best for you, and then go ahead and give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Since 2010, WPR members have provided more than 400,000 meals to people facing hunger in Wisconsin. This drive, Alliant Energy will match up to 12,500 meals. Join in now. Ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts with your donation of $10 or $20 a month. It will go twice as far in providing hunger relief to people in your community. Here's how to give.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on, and you can take advantage of that food bank thank you gift. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with celebrity special guest Larry Mueller. Your support today of WPR keeps all the programs you enjoy, Central Time, Larry Mueller Show, That Other Stuff, going strong. Whether you give 10 bucks a month or 100, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
December is a great time of year to think back about what's important to you. And because WPR is important to you, I hope you'll make a gift to support the station you count on. You're going to feel great when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
However you choose to give, thank you. Your support really is a big deal. Today, there's still something more you can do to help us out. Encourage a friend or family member to join the Wisconsin Public Radio community.
Spread the love a little bit. Tell your friends and family that you support WPR, and you might inspire them to do the same at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hey, now just looking for two more gifts by the end of this hour. I think we're going to do it, Larry, and I hope we go beyond it because this is the last weekday of the drive, last chance to give during Central Time. Thank you so much if you've already given. If not, take some action right now. Make your gift for the WPR programs you rely on all year round. Do it at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Hey, it's kind of exciting. Only two more to go,
yeah.
And let's get beyond it. And you know what? As an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll be entered into a pretty cool drawing. Five lucky people will win $250 to spend on unique items at Etsy.com. No contribution necessary. You can see WPR.org/drawing for details. But better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And as we always say, sustainers making those ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
If you're not a sustainer, if you're asking what is the sustainer you keep talking about, you can become one right now. Here's how it works. You just set up monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Then when you do that, you'll know every time you're listening, like, hey, I'm helping pay for this right now. You're always current. Make that gift right now. It takes just a few minutes to set up.
David on Alaska says WPR is my go-to radio station every time, especially during car trips. I finally felt comfortable enough to visit my daughter's family and two granddaughters recently, and it was great to have WPR along the
way. Wow. Great story, David. Thank you so much for that. Glad to be there. Glad to be a companion in your day, whether you're driving or working or cooking or just hanging out at home. I love that we're here with you. I'm glad I get to spend this time with you, and you can help keep it coming your way. When you make your gift right now, online takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or give a call at 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday, and this week we're talking about flavor. It's one of the main reasons we cook anything. We talk about flavor a lot, but there's a lot more to our food's flavor than just picking out the right ingredients. Texture, color, even the way we're feeling all impact how we perceive different foods. Our next guest digs into all of that in his latest book, along with some recipes for us to try out. Nick Sharma is a food writer, photographer, molecular biologist, and author of the book, The Flavor Equation, The Science of Great Cooking Explained in More Than 100 Essential Recipes. We talked to him earlier this year. Here's a listen. Well, now you are a cook. You've been a food photographer. You're a scientist. Why did you want to tackle the ways we can use science to make our food better?
I guess that's the million-dollar question, right? I think that's such an important thing to me because that's what makes me a better cook at home. I am a self-taught cook, and one of the things that happened when I was teaching myself to cook by reading cookbooks or watching TV shows was to I needed to find out the answers to why things were not working and why they were working. And at the end of it all, science always gave me the solution, or rather those answers to explain things better and also make me a wiser cook. And so when I was writing this book, it made sense to me to write a cookbook about science.
And speaking of science, experiments, big part of science. And for you, they've been a big part of cooking. And I was the same way. In my 20s, I would try to make food completely by guessing. Sometimes it was terrible, but through those experiments, I eventually also learned how to make good things. How important is it for us to, you know, be willing to play around with our cooking and try new things?
I think it's absolutely important because if you think about it, people who have taught us to cook, our family members, you know, they've learned to do things through trial and error, right? And that's the same thing that inevitably that happens with us when we're trying to cook at home. Like you mentioned, trying out something new in the kitchen, you kind of should expect to fail. And I think that's okay, because that's what makes you smarter. You start to pay attention to things that didn't work, try to figure out ways to fix those problems, and then you make yourself a better cook. And if you think about the history of cooking, that's how all recipes have developed over time, through a lot of trial and error, through a lot of experimentation. And I think that's just natural progression with cooking.
Nick, I've gotten pretty good at making food that tastes pretty good, I think. But you say there's more to the food experience than just taste. There's a bunch of different things. One of them is the visual appeal. And that's never been a strong point of mine. There is research, though, that shows that what food looks like affects how people perceive how good it is. How important is the look of food to how much we appreciate it?
I definitely think it plays a huge role. You know, if you think about it, when we go to restaurants, you know, you're constantly primed to how the food looks. You open a magazine or watch a food TV show. There's a lot of visual stuff happening with food, right? You've got the garnishes that are going in, even the visual drama with video these days. Video is such an important component of food on social media. And if you take a look, like even just squeezing a lemon, you kind of feel like you're right there with that experience. So visuals do play such an important role with food. And one of the fascinating things that I've started to observe, and I did this with the book, I asked people questions as to kind of what taste they associated different colors or shapes with. And people do, you know, associate colors, for example, chilies, red, you know, it's just really fascinating how much color and shapes and all, you know, visuals all play a role in us appreciating flavor.
And Nick, you, of course, focus on taste and flavor a lot in the book. And you've got one category of flavor that I know in my head what it means, but I couldn't define it. And that is a category of brightness. What do we mean about flavors that add brightness to a dish?
So it was anything that's sour to taste. So I define acidity, instead of saying acid, I've been calling it brightness, because that's what acids do to our food. It adds a spot of brightness. Everything can feel quite monotonous sometimes, but when you add a little bit of lemon juice or lime juice, even vinegar, it will give that spark. And that's what brightness refers to in the cookbook.
And we've got, you gave us some recipes, by the way. We've got these up at WPR.org/Food Friday. People can check them out and make them this weekend. In that brightness category, you've got one that we've got up on our website, roasted cauliflower. I mean, you had me at roasted cauliflower. I'll keep going, though. Roasted cauliflower and turmeric kefir. First of all, kefir, this is that's like that fermented, it's like yogurt, but in more liquid form, right?
Yeah, it's from Central... from Bulgaria, if I'm correct. It's a fermented form of dairy, very similar to buttermilk, and actually it can be used as a fantastic substitute for buttermilk.
And now what is it doing in this roasted cauliflower dish? Is that the source, that tanginess of that, the source of some of the brightness here?
Yeah, so because it's fermented dairy, you've got lactic acid, which is providing the sourness to the sauce of this dish. And what the kefir is doing in here is that it's providing this cool, you know, it's yogurt's kind of, even though it's warm in this dish, it still has a cooling effect in your body. And that's what I found really fascinating. So you've got these, you know, the roasted cauliflower, and then you've got the spices in there, which are providing heat. And then you've got this velvety, luxurious kefir that's providing the backdrop for the sauce. And it's tangy. And again, that provides that nice, bright, delicious taste to the dish.
You mentioned those lactic acid molecules in the fermented product, the kefir there. Now, you come from this with a background as a molecular biologist. What is flavor? What's happening when something goes into my mouth and I taste it? What am I detecting there?
So it's a whole bunch of different things. When you put food into your mouth, you've got the aromas that first hit your head, you know, your senses. And you're picking up aromas when the food is moving to your mouth, but also when you're chewing. And then you've got your taste receptors that are being activated. So if we're talking about this roasted cauliflower dish with kefir, you've got the sourness from the lactic acids that's touching your taste receptors. You've got the spices that are, you know, it's a pleasant response to irritation, which we've learned to love. A lot of our spices actually perform this phenomenon called chemesthesis. And it's not really a taste. It's basically an irritation to our nerves. And so that's taking, you know, coming into effect. You've got these other tastes like the salt in there, you know, some of the sugars that are present in naturally present in food. And so all of that's coming together and creating this multisensorial experience in your mouth.
We are having a Food Friday conversation with Nick Sharma. His new book is called The Flavor Equation, The Science of Great Cooking Explained in More Than 100 Essential Recipes. You've got a collard greens, chickpea, and lentil soup. That is in the bitterness category of your book. And I could see those collard greens. It'll have a little of that bitter flavor. Talk about how we could use those bitter flavors in a soup like this without, I worry about it getting overwhelming.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of bitter food at all. I actually hate the most bitter foods. But in this case, collard greens, the bitterness is quite mild compared to something like coffee or tea or even beer. And what I've done in this recipe is I've added a bunch of different acids, again, to play around with the bitterness. Acids are really fantastic at masking some of that bitterness during cooking. And then there's also a little bit of salt in the recipe, which helps with that. So again, you know, acids just do so much in our cooking. Here, it helps with controlling the amount of bitterness that you perceive in the dish.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Sherry now in Amherst. Sherry, hi.
Hi. I like to experiment with cooking, and I was living in Hong Kong for a while and have a really good friend there that was telling me about black garlic and how healthy it was for you. And so she made it for me in her rice cooker. So I just made a batch of it. It took me 3 weeks. You put it in your rice cooker on low, on warm, it can't be cooking, for 3 weeks. And after 3 weeks, the garlic turns black. It's kind of mushy and kind of soft and kind of a tangy, pungent taste compared to garlic, hard garlic.
Interesting, Sherry.
So wondering, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call, Sherry. Now, garlic is something that it's really different depending on how you cook it, or I guess slow cook it in this case. You've got some examples with onions in your book as well, Nick. Talk about how, I guess, the way and the pace and the style in which we cook things like garlic and onions can really bring out a lot of different flavors.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I've learned about alliums, which includes garlic and onions, is that they're actually really rich in sugar. But we always think of them as being something pungent, right? And one of the things we do often with cooking, and even in the case of black garlic, what's happening is all these sugars are changing their chemical nature as they're heated. And the sweetness comes out. So, you know, caramelized onions, for example, or browned onions will always stay sweeter and less pungent. In the case of raw onions, when you're chopping them up, they're fresh. So they've got that enzyme. There's an enzyme in there that makes them very pungent, which is also what makes us cry. And that is such a fantastic way sometimes to add that kick or that bite in a salad. And if you want something milder, you could use shallots. I think shallots are much milder compared to a red onion, less spicy, less pungent. You know, garlic isn't as potent in terms of its pungency as onions are, at least to me. But, you know, again, all these ingredients, like you can also cook onions and garlic in the oven. And I do that quite often. I just stick them in the oven and forget about them, come back later, and they turn so sweet. You pop those into a soup, like roasted garlic in a soup when blended with pumpkin or butternut squash is so delicious. And it just adds this whole different depth of flavor than it would if it were raw. And so they're just such wonderful ingredients, easily available. How you play with them in the kitchen changes their flavor completely. And I always tell people that's the best place to start.
Let's bring on another caller now. Nate is on the line calling from Madison. Nate, hello.
Hello there.
What do you want to tell us about, Nate?
We were talking about acids and vinegars and lemon juice. And I know that while they're both acids, they're going to have very different pH levels and acidities and structures. So, like, why would we use lemon juice instead of a vinegar or wine or anything like that?
Oh, interesting, Nate. Thanks a lot. So the different properties of our different acids and when they might work in a different dish. What do you think, Nick?
Absolutely. So that's a really good question. I did some investigations for this at Serious Eats, where I write a science-based food column. And It turns out that all acids behave differently. This is not surprising because they all have different chemical structures. And if you're making a marinade with yogurt for chicken or with lamb or beef or whatever kind of meat, you can actually leave a marinade with yogurt because of the lactic acid for several hours to even overnight in your refrigerator. It won't affect the texture of the meat at all. If you use vinegar, you can't do that because vinegar will literally rip the surface of the meat if it's left for too long and it gets kind of mushy. What's happening here is that animals have evolved to produce lactic acid naturally. We all produce lactic acid. It's in our bloodstream at all times and at different levels. So our cells in our body are used to dealing with lactic acid, which is why it's not surprising that yogurt, in which lactic acid is the key acid, doesn't affect the texture of meat that drastically, and you actually get a really nice juicy brine meat when it's cooked. So that's just one example. The other thing about a lot of these acids is that the way they affect food textures when cooking is quite different, and you can try this out for yourself. If you cook chickpeas, for example, in vinegar, and if you cook them in citric acid, you'll get drastically different textures, which are quite noticeable. This is because of how citric acid, which is the key acid in lemon juice and lime juice, just behaves really differently.
Thanks a lot for that call, Nick, for that call. And Nick, that's all the time we have. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. That was fun.
That was Nick Sharma, food writer and photographer. He joined us in January to talk about his new book, The Flavor Equation, The Science of Great Cooking, explained in more than 100 essential recipes. You can find those recipes we talked about with Nick at WPR.org/Food Friday. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Year-End Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me to encourage you to take some action. Set your favorite programs up for success in 2022 with your gift during this drive. Maybe you've already given this year or you make ongoing monthly gifts. Today, you can make a special year-end gift for the programs you rely on all year long. It takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And about 4 minutes left in this hour, and the new acronym LMNSTG takes effect right now, Rob. It's the Larry Mueller New Short-Term Goal. That's what
Ooh.
That stands for.
Wow, I'm learning something new here, Larry.
Yeah.
Just like I do all the time on the Ideas Network.
Well, we went over. We've got 11 gifts in. And so then the LMNSTG kicks in automatically, and that means that we need two more contributors up at the top of the hour. So make your gift to support the program you enjoy and rely on every day.
Now, these LMNSTGs are super important. They help us stay on track for a great future here at Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR programs are listener powered. That means your donation right now makes a difference and helps us hit this LMNSTG at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I love that last segment where we learned about the science in cooking. It was great. It was nice to have that re-recorded from the January show. These are the kinds of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
This drive, Alliant Energy, is partnering with WPR to help provide hunger relief in Wisconsin. They'll match every dollar raised through the food bank thank you gifts up to $5,000.
That means that your thank you gift then is going to provide an additional 25 or 50 meals to families in your area. Ask for yours now when you give 10 or 20 bucks a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Looking for two more gifts now. We hit our original goal for the hour. Larry set that additional goal. Two more on this, the last weekday of the member drive. Give to support Wisconsin Public Radio. Grab that food bank thank you gift along the way and feed people in need in your community. But the main reason to give, of course, is that you count on the Ideas Network, shows like Central Time and the Larry Mueller Show, for great conversations and companionship each and every day. And you know that we count on you to help pay for it. Make a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And your contribution today not only pays for the programs you listen to, it also gives others the chance to discover WPR. So make that difference. Gift of $100, maybe $10 a month, whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hey, does a dollar a day for Wisconsin Public Radio sound like a bargain for you, given how much you listen to it, how much you get out of it? A dollar a day is a pretty good value, less than a cup of coffee or a soda or a day of cell phone service.
And a dollar a day comes out to $30 a month, and you can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or your charge it to your credit card. Make your gift right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Emily in Milwaukee says, I feel more engaged with the communities in the rest of the state after listening to WPR. Paying to support public radio is the second best thing I can do for my state next to voting. I'm exposed to hearing political views that I don't align with, which reminds me that WPR is truly balanced and fair. Emily, thank you so much. A big part of our mission, we're not just here to provide information. I love that we can provide connection for people from different parts of Wisconsin and beyond. If that's important to you, too, make a gift to support it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your support.